Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Preacher Boys podcast. I make this show for you, and I hope that you really enjoy it. I have a lot of people that ask me how they can support the show financially, and you can do that by heading over to patreon.com/preacherboys. You're going to get access to exclusive content, including early releases of episodes. I've got a couple episodes right now that have been released at least a month early over on Patreon. You've got access to things like unique merch, depending on what tier you join, and you get access to some behind the scenes content that I'm posting within the group. So head over to patreon.com/preacherboys and become a member over there today. Every single supporter helps make this show a little bit more possible, especially as I continue to add additional episodes and content every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the show.
Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast dedicated to shedding light on abuse within independent fundamental Baptist churches and equipping survivors on their healing journey. On today's episode, I'm going to be recapping some of the headlines that surfaced this week. Almost all of these stories took place in the past couple of days, and there is an additional story I'll be covering that took place back in June. So I'm going to break down each of these stories. If you want to skip around or you want to listen to specific stories, but you want to skip some others, you can go to the show notes of this episode and you can find timestamps so you can skip to whatever stories are of interest to you. But for those listening through the entire episode, let's get into our first story. This story was originally reported on by Vermilion County First. You can find a link to the article in the description of this episode. On August 1st, Robert Lizell, former principal of First Baptist School and a deacon at First Baptist Church, was sentenced to 12 years in prison after pleading guilty to criminal sexual assault against former student Michael Young. It's important to note that Lizell is the third prominent former staff member to be charged with sexual crimes against minors since the late 90s. During Lizell's sentencing hearing, Young and his family shared their accounts of Lizell's prolonged pursuit and abuse of Young. Recently, on August 18th, members of the Blue Shirt Coalition, a group supporting Young, gathered outside First Baptist Church along Vermilion Street to protest. Protesters, including Kate Gibson and Melissa Anderson, highlighted the need for open discussions about the issue and the importance of creating internal reporting mechanisms for children who feel unsafe. They urged greater oversight of school and church staff, emphasizing that accountability is not persecution. Despite the protest, church leadership did not engage with the demonstrators and requested media presence to leave the property without providing further comments. And next, a pastor was arrested for masturbating outside of a Walmart. This story involves the pastor of Lighthouse Baptist Church in Antioch, Illinois. The Kenosha County Eye reports that in the early morning of August 10th, at a Summers Walmart, an individual was reportedly observed fully naked, standing next to a black truck, masturbating. The Kenosha County Sheriff's Department made an arrest, and the individual was later identified as 57-year-old pastor Thomas Bartmer. Thomas Bartmer, as per his website, which has now been wiped, has been a pastor at Lighthouse Church in Antioch, Illinois. His journey into the ministry began with a Lutheran upbringing, and his history is marked by his involvement with various churches where he held leadership roles, including teaching, preaching, and work with community programs. He began Lighthouse Baptist Church on September 6, 1997. And on March 27, 1999, Lighthouse constituted as a self-sustaining church and was granted official membership in the Illinois Baptist State Association and the Southern Baptist Convention. The church website declares, quote, "Lighthouse continues to this day to share the love of Christ to the world, all the while remaining solidly devoted to biblical principles. Behind every act of service is the faithful commitment of its members and leaders to maintain a biblically centered theology and a ministry that brings glory and honor to the name of Jesus Christ. Anyway, after Bartmer was caught masturbating in a Walmart parking lot and saw deputies approaching, Bartmer quickly attempted to get into the truck while still naked. Bartmer later admitted to the act and was arrested on charges of disorderly conduct and lewd and lascivious actions, both misdemeanors. As of now, Lighthouse Church has not issued an official public statement addressing the incident. Our third story comes from Madison, Wisconsin, where Baptist pastor Robert Stein has been charged with child sexual assault following an investigation into allegations that he inappropriately touched children in his care. News 3 reports, Robert Stein faces two felony charges of first-degree child sex assault, sexual contact, or sexual intercourse with a person under the age of 13, online court records show. In July, Pastor Stein of Midvale Baptist Church had his license revoked for operating the church's Kids Best child care facility in June. The action followed an inquiry by the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families and the Madison Police Department. A young girl reported that Stein assaulted her on 3 separate occasions. Legal documents indicate that the mother of a girl under 13 years old contacted the Madison police in April of the current year about an incident involving her daughter during her participation in Stein's summer camp in 2018 and 2019. At the Midvale Baptist Church. The girl, after a school sex education course about inappropriate behavior, informed her family about 3 incidents involving Stein when she was 9 years old and attending the Kids Best day camp. These incidents included Stein inappropriately touching and giving her massages while allegedly erect and other inappropriate behavior. The girl disclosed that Stein told her she was, quote, special and that he was proud of her. Additionally, there was an incident where Stein made her sit on his lap in the dark during a game called Murder in the Dark and engaged in inappropriate conduct. The girl initially did not know how to react to these incidents due to her trust in Stein as an adult. Over time, she learned more about boundaries and her body, which made her uncomfortable with the situation. She felt guilty for a while and believed it was her fault until she eventually discussed the incidents with a friend at school who had also experienced similar inappropriate contact with Stein. This led to the girl informing school social workers and later her mother about the event. School officials and the girl's mother alerted Child Protective Services and the police, and the police investigation gathered corroborative evidence, including a medical incident on the same day as the assault. There were previous concerns raised about Stein's behavior in 2021, when witnesses informed the Department of Natural Resources and the Middleton Police Department about his inappropriate actions toward a child during an outing to Devil's Lake State Park. However, no further action was taken at that time. During the ongoing police investigation, Stein continued to preach occasionally and lead business meetings until late July, as indicated by videos on the church's YouTube channel. However, these videos were removed following News 3 showing intention to report on the story. The church also took down its website shortly after the news broke. Stein's attorney, Chris Van Wagner, confirmed that Stein resigned from the Midvale Baptist Church after the initial report by News 3 investigates. Stein maintains his innocence and denies any wrongdoing, expressing his desire to spare the church and its members from unnecessary distractions. An initial court appearance for Stein is scheduled for August 24th, in just a couple days from now. And the last thing I want to cover is 2 names that are fairly well known within IFB circles have made some very unhelpful commentary and discourse surrounding clergy abuse and victims within the church. Now, there is certainly no shortage of unhelpful commentary and discourse surrounding clergy abuse, but these 2 are particularly terrible examples. And considering that they come from higher profile voices adjacent to the IFB, I wanted to talk about them. One comes from Shelley Hamilton, wife of the late Ron Hamilton, better known as Patch the Pirate, and she posted something just recently that I would love to address. And the other comes from Ken Scop and his co-host on his podcast, and that came out in June, but just came across my desk this week. Let's go ahead and start with Shelley Hamilton's post. Shelley's post read, "Victor, not victim." Now, whenever you see these words, it's a buzzword that gets thrown around within IFB circles all the time. Are you going to be bitter? Are you going to be better? Are you going to be a victim? Are you going to be a victor? This kind of unhealthy language has popped up over and over and over again, but I decided to keep reading to see what Shelley had to say. She says, "I've heard far too many stories of young people criticizing their Christian homes, schools, and churches on public social media platforms. Some go after these institutions with a venom Satan himself would be proud to claim. It appears to be a popular trend. Once one person starts the rampage of blaming anything and everything God put it in their path, then another gets on board. One person equals 2, equals 4, equals 8, and so forth. Exponentially, the problem explodes. Something a lone wolf denounces spreads like a plague and starts festering in hearts and minds. The ugly virus calls out to young people everywhere, get on board, it's the thing, you can blame your upbringing for all your problems, there's comfort in being part of the herd. Now, I'm going to pause right now from what she's saying and address what is said so far within this statement, because this is something that I see said by many people within the IFB. When you see movements like Preacher Boys, or you see groups of people gathering around survivor pages, or people who have left abusive church environments, yes, it is true. These people do start to find other people who have been through the same experiences. This is a normal thing to see happen. I don't think this is happening because it's easy, or this is the thing to do, as she says. And I don't think that there's comfort in doing this. I do think it helps to have a community of people around you, but I think largely most people that I talk to who have been through severe abuses would rather not be publicly involved in some of these discussions, but have been forced to be because of misinformation that's spread about them by their church, because they need to share their side of the story, because they feel like they just disappeared from a community. There's a lot of reasons. And I think when you see this get chalked up to just a, you know, what she calls throughout her, you know, statement and what many people in the comments called victim culture, you know, I think it's very unhelpful and it's a misdiagnosis of what is really happening. Are there people who left relatively, you know, vanilla environments who are, you know, extremely upset about maybe some of the rules or some of the more hard-nosed kind of approaches to dress standards and things like that? Yes, absolutely. But I would say the people who are really making a time criticizing Christian homes, schools, churches on social media platforms are doing so because they had horrifically tragic experiences. And this entire statement from top to bottom is very dismissive about that. I'll continue with her statement. She says, are homes, churches, or schools perfect? I don't know of any. And I would agree with that statement. Do Christians make mistakes? Yes, all the time. I would agree with that statement. But young people, please don't let your parents, teachers, and or pastors' mistakes condone yours. Now, she doesn't say exactly what these mistakes are, but you know, I'm sure people can deduce what some of the things she might be referring to would be. I wish she would have given some more clarity and more specific examples. But she says, I want to tell you the backstory of someone who works at Majesty Music, which is, of course, the ministry that she runs. She says, this woman is lovely, vivacious, upbeat, fun-loving, God-serving, and sweet. She has a few of what could be considered, quote, legitimate circumstances that can make anyone become bitter. Number one, she was adopted. Number two, her dad was a pastor but had to step down, not because of his own doing. Number three, she and her brother were raised most of their growing up years by their dad. Her brother then became a leukemia survivor. And I must admit, although I've known her for the 8 years she's worked in customer service at Majesty Music, it was not until yesterday I learned some of her upbringing. I was shocked. I would never, by the spirit she displays on a daily basis, have dreamt these, quote, could be reasons of a despondent and bitter identity existed. No, not Andrea Allen. Andrea is a victor, not a victim. I think of Dr. Ben Carson, whose father left him because he had a previous yet still existing wife and family when he married Ben's mother. Ben's mother therefore had to scrape for every penny earned and work multiple jobs to put food on the table and a roof over their head. She became depressed and spent months in a mental facility, but Ben Carson became a victor, not a victim. A victim walks through sand and sees dirt. A victor walks through sand and sees the ingredients to build a sandcastle. I say shame on you if you publicly condemn a home, parents, a church, or a school who tried to the best of their ability to love you and serve Christ. You are responsible for your attitude and actions. You don't have to lift those up as perfect who gave you food, shelter, training, preaching, and Christian community, but you certainly should not throw them in the dirt. I want to pause here again and talk about this because this is one of the things where, again, clarity is helpful. You're making a statement as an influencer within this circle. Yes, it's a small pond, but you're a big fish within that small pond. And you're sitting here giving some extreme examples. You talk about, you know, thinking of Ben Carson, whose father left because he had a previous family. You talk about all of these different situations that are very, very extreme. And then you go, I say shame on you if you condemn a home, parents, church, school who tried for the best of the ability to love you and serve Christ. A victim walks through sand and sees dirt. A victor walks through sand and sees the ingredients to build a sandcastle, which is such a weird statement. But one of the things that's not helpful here is that there's no clarity as to what you can call out, what you can address. If someone had a whole nother family, like she gives in this example, were they doing their best to show you love and how to serve Christ? Were these people who were fulfilling their role? If you have a Christian family that is extremely abusive, should you still be grateful for them teaching you about this doctrine and theology, even though all of their actions lived contrarily to what they said they believed? And again, this is where she doesn't give an example, and she's speaking to victims and putting more responsibility on victims than to the people who are creating the victims. That's the issue that I see with this statement and with the Ken Scott podcast I'm going to talk about in just a minute. This whole post is telling victims how they should feel about people who said that they believed one thing and acted completely contrarily to that. I'm going to go ahead and keep reading. It says, please be respectful of those who dedicated their lives and substance to rear you and teach you. Forgive the mistakes and don't make them the cause of your bitterness. Listen to the words of one who overcame. Again, what mistakes are we, quote unquote, forgiving? What are the things that happen? Is it abuse? Is it neglect? Is it some of the other examples that you just gave? In which case, what are we being thankful for in these situations? Why are you prodding people to give thanks for this type of person? Now, again, I can agree largely with the idea of, you know, your parents are doing your best and they're going to make a lot of mistakes. As a parent myself, I know this to be true, but you're giving such a broad brush to sweep under the rug so many real horrific traumas that happen within a lot of IFB churches and beyond. She says, quoting Andrea here, she says, I started taking piano lessons in K-5, continued through most of my school years. Later, I took accordion, marimba, and organ lessons for a short time. I worked as a telephone salesperson in high school and at the information desk in college. Little did I know that God would use all these things to help me many years later in my work at Majesty Music. I used to play the song Rejoice in the Lord over and over on the piano, working through many emotions and feelings. Again, little did I know that I would eventually work for the man who wrote the song. What a gift it is to be part of this family and ministry. I enjoy working on my flower beds, playing hymns on the piano for stress relief, traveling with my husband to the beach and the mountains, cooking and having all my family around the dinner table, loving on my granddaughter and all things candy corn. And of course, Andrea says, have a blessed day on purpose. Now, look, I'm not going to speak to Andrea's story because it sounds like she is a very kind person. She's living a life that she enjoys and she loves spending time with family. And I don't want to get into all of that. I want to get to the heart, really, of the post itself and what Shelley is trying to communicate. And again, I think that this post really lacks any nuance or grace for those who've experienced legitimate abuse or trauma within the church. There is a big difference between being grateful for imperfect people who did their best to love and help you and silently allowing and accepting legitimately evil and abusive people to continue onward. Rape, molestation, physical beatings, and more do not count as mistakes. And young people hurt have every right to share their story surviving these things with anyone who will listen and in any format in which they want to share those stories. How great it would be for people like Shelley and for the church to embrace these survivors and hear them from where they are than to scold them for how and why they are sharing what happened. I have all these same issues with the next thing I want to talk about, which is this podcast from Ken Scott. This episode originally dropped on their podcast June 13th, 2023. It was released on the Spirit Forward podcast hosted by Joshua Smith, who is the pastor at Cowan Mill Church in Winston, Georgia, and Ken Scott, who's the lead pastor at the Father's House in Westchester, Ohio. Most listening to the podcast are probably familiar with the name Scott, but for those who aren't, Ken Scott is the son of disgraced pastor Jack Scott. Jack Scott led the First Baptist Church in Hammond, Indiana from 2001 until 2012, when it was discovered he was sexually abusing a 16-year-old girl who was a member of his congregation. He was subsequently arrested and sentenced to 12 years in federal prison for transportation of a minor across state lines with the intent of engaging in sexual abuse. Now, do not mishear me. Ken Scott is in no way responsible, or is he connected or share any fault with Jack Scott for that abuse. I don't feel like I need to say that, but I want to make sure that I'm extremely clear here. I do not hold Ken accountable for the sins of his father. What I will say is that this story is given as context in the podcast episode as to why there are few people who are more qualified to talk about the subject of church hurt than Ken Scott. And as much as I can sympathize for Ken for the shock that comes from your father committing an atrocious act, this is something that I cannot possibly fathom. This is a twist that would come out that would destroy really anybody who experiences it. I have extreme sympathy for Ken in this regard, but in no way does his father being a sexual predator make Ken the most important voice when it comes to hurt within the church. The most important voices when it comes to people who have been harmed by abusers in the church would be the victims themselves. And there are a lot of statements and a lot of thoughts given to victims throughout this podcast. And again, the entire podcast is focused on what victims should be doing and the responsibility of victims and how victims should feel and how victims should act, not addressing the perpetrators who are creating victims over and over and over and over again. If this podcast was going to be done in a correct way and not handle the subject extremely poorly, like I feel like it does, and like many of the sound bites I'm going to play are going to show you, they should have brought on a survivor. But instead, Ken Scott and Josh are brought in and Ken Scott and Joshua Smith just share their opinions, their thoughts on how this topic should be tackled. Here's an idea. If you're going to do a topic like this, bring on survivors. I'm not sitting here saying I'm more qualified than Ken Scott. In fact, I would say that Ken Scott has had a much closer upfront look to how devastating this is in the church. This is not a me versus Ken Scott thing. This is the fact that I don't see myself as fully qualified either. That's why I bring on so many experts and first and foremost, so many survivors to tell me how the church should deal with this, how abuse actually affected them, and what the church can do better to serve these survivors. And that is something that is missing so like noticeably from this episode is it is a lot of telling survivors, do this, do that, feel this way, do this thing, don't treat your, you know, abuser this way. It is such an unhelpful and damaging episode for anyone looking for legitimate help.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There's a couple sound bites in this that I can just mention quickly and I'll play them. You can hear it for yourself and I'll give a couple thoughts here and there. But like I said, first and foremost, Ken is propped up as being the most eligible to speak about this stuff.
Frankly, Ken, if there's anyone qualified to talk about church abuse and church hurt, I mean, you've seen it all. You've been in the midst of all of it. And yet here you stand to testify of the healing of Jesus, to walk in freedom, to be able to bless those who curse you and so forth. So I think this is going to be a conversation that helps a ton of people.
I think he extremely frequently in the episode downplays abuse within the conversation and really eliminates a lot of the corporate responsibility of the church when it comes to this topic. There is a good part of the conversation in the episode where you know, they talk about pastors apologizing, and it's the first time many survivors hear an apology from a pastor. I thought that was spot on, really good stuff. But throughout the episode and other places, they say things that contradict that. Like in the beginning, they go on this bit of a rant about how this stuff has been happening in so many different ministries. There's been a lot of documentaries about it recently. And there's been a lot of church hurt since the church started. And they talk about, you know, if the internet had been around in the day, there'd be some one-star reviews on Yelp. It's just handled in a very light way. I felt like that was pretty insensitive. And they mentioned that they're not going to be insensitive throughout this episode, but I felt like honestly, they frankly really were.
You know, there's always some scandal going on, but it seems that with the popularity of Christian themed entertainment, correspondingly, there has been an increase in documentaries and, you know, different shows kind of exposing the dark underbelly of different ministries.
Yeah.
So I know there's been some stuff about Hillsong quite a bit, right? So what was news headlines 2 years ago is now a documentary. There's been a lot of stuff about the homeschool movement in America. And I think Amazon has done something about, you know, tying the Duggar family to all that. And it's, unfortunately, it's always something, right? Mm-hmm. And it's something that myself and many friends of mine in my home church years ago experienced all too personally. So, there's been a lot of church hurt since the church started. And, yes, you know, even in the book of Acts, there's a lot of emotions that you don't see. Luke doesn't record the emotions, but I'm sure that if Ananias and Sapphira had relatives in the church, was probably some like one-star reviews on Yelp for that church. And, you know, from Luke's perspective, this had to happen. And I don't mean to make light of it, but, you know, it's not too soon. It's been 2,000 years. We can make light of that one. We promise we'll be more sensitive towards issues and not be dismissive.
Now, Ken does dive in a little bit to some of the background that he had at First Baptist Church of Hammond, but he's pretty vague, legitimately. I mean, he's legitimately pretty vague. He talks a little bit about a couple scandals, but doesn't go into details, doesn't name the church, doesn't name some of the bigger issues that happened. It is a pretty light brush on the backstory there.
In my home church, there were several significant scandals that happened before I was born. And growing up, they were like talked about, like they were called battles, and they were talked about by years. So there was always the Battle of 84, the Battle of 89. And I didn't know what that meant, you know. And as a pastor, I understand how difficult a season can be when you lose people. So I can see why they would call it a battle. But as I got older and learned about some of those battles, I realized that there were scandals. There were scandalous things that happened. And in some cases, they were never discussed, never resolved. And it hurt a lot of people. So like many Christians, I was a part of a church at the time that had those scandals. And then as we referenced in our inner healing episode, a very personal scandal took place when I was in more leadership. I was the vice president of the college there. And my dad was the pastor, and unfortunately, he was a part of a scandal that was criminal, a scandal that led to his firing and then led to a 10-year prison sentence. In that season, Jay Leno told a joke about him on The Tonight Show. Dr. Phil called us several times trying to get us on to process as a family on television. And ABC and NBC News called my cell phone asking for interviews. So it was very public, very, very public news story in the Chicagoland area during that year. And then for a little while, briefly, it was a national story for like 3 days, like most news cycles that are national.
And I think, again, there's a lot of things where clarity is important in this conversation. I think specifically delineating between what is legitimate abuse that requires a person to never be restored within the church versus what is a consensual affair and something that can be worked through counseling. I mean, there are some things here that really need to be discussed that just don't. It's broadly just talked about as church hurt and people that have been hurt by the church and people that have, he uses the word, fallen over and over and over again.
But you've got the biblical call for restoration of someone who's fallen. You need discernment. Is this a wolf in sheep's clothing? Was this person ever a follower of Jesus? Is this a cult leader? Right? Like, that's a different approach to dealing with, like, David Koresh from Waco, if he would have survived, and dealing with a pastor who fell. Yeah. And when a pastor falls, and by the way, when we use the word fall, because this has actually been a complaint, when we use the word fall, we're not using a dismissive term like trying to underemphasize what they did. The word fall is a theological term. Adam damned all of mankind when he fell. So it's a very serious term to fall. We're not talking about someone who just tripped and accidentally abused or hurt somebody. We're not trying to use dismissive terms, but we're pastors, so we use theological terms.
And to be completely honest, listening to this episode, it reminded me a lot of a recent episode that David Hiles did with Pastor David Baker, where they talked about restoration and restoring people who had quote unquote fallen. And this episode felt so similar. It was all about restoration. It was all about people who've fallen, but with no clarity as to what any of those things really, really mean. A lot of the conversation throughout the episode was about forgiveness and healing. And it was honestly, again, very unhelpful. There was not a lot of conversation here about why forgiveness is needed, first and foremost, between a victim and a abuser. And then furthermore, when it came to healing, ultimately, Ken just started promoting his Rafa room, which is essentially a prayer room within the church. And again, no conversations about therapy, no conversations about, separating yourself from your abuser, establishing boundaries. It was, you need to pray and forgive your abuser.
Rapha is the name healer of Yahweh Rapha. He's the healer. Yeah. So you have a room for healing. Can you explain what to the listener? What is a Rapha room?
That could be its own episode. John G. Lake started healing rooms in Washington State. I don't know if he was the first one to do this. In fact, I know he wasn't. But his healing rooms led directly to the formation of Mayo Clinic. So he had a massive role, and his followers and co-laborers had a massive role in starting actual hospitals. But in that season, they ministered to body, soul, and spirit. And so I think having the idea of a healing room goes back generations.
Yeah, I wanted to just put this kind of towards the front end of the episode is that if you've gone through the hurt and if you're carrying wounds, body, soul, or spirit, that you can contact Ken's church, my church, Josh Smith's church, and we would love to get you in here and have just a private prayer experience for you to find the healing that's needed. And I mean, this is... Yeah. How fruitful of a ministry this is. We want to help you. So I just kind of want to put that at the end of the episode. Please contact
us. We deal with a ton of things, but the things that seem to come to us over and over again are addiction, fear, and dealing with church hurt or family hurt, family wounds. So I'd say those are probably four of the top five that we deal with on a consistent basis. And it's not that we're advertising those are our four things. Come to us if you have these things. It's just that when people come, that or call us and need prayer, ask for an appointment. That's what it tends to be. So,
yeah, I would say if you can identify the fruit in your life, a lot of times it's the fruit that bothers us. You know, some man has a pornography addiction. He's really aggravated about that. Well, that's bad fruit. And what we want to do in these prayer rooms is to take you to the roots of the thing and find and go back towards this is when you got rejected as a child. This is when you got rejected by your spiritual father, your spiritual pastor, your leader. And we want to help dig out those roots and find healing in God. And I mean, it's real. It's real. So we can stand here in freedom and say, yes, the Lord just ripped those strongholds right out of my chest. And here I stand able to bless those who have cursed me and so on. And so I want to make that very clear that there is like surgical ministry that can happen to set anyone free.
They take it into such a spiritual direction that they warn that victims with unforgiveness, what they call it, are actually opening themselves up to demonic forces and demonic possession, which is honestly, again, a disturbing and disgusting thing to put on the shoulders of a victim and not onto a predator.
Jesus Christ actually says, if we're harboring unforgiveness, we're making space for the demons in my life. I'm being thrown to demons. And Paul reiterated this in Ephesians chapter 4 when he said, you let the sun go down on your wrath and you give place to the enemy, which, I mean, that's just another way of talking about unforgiveness. So, I mean, we're coming at this going, dude, I don't want any victim to have a worse situation by their own unforgiveness and by extension, an open door to demons.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want you to have the wound and demons, right? We want you free and clear of all of this stuff. And that's where we're coming from.
They talk a little bit about the American justice system versus spiritual justice, again, in a very unhelpful way.
The American justice system will never satisfy that wound in your heart. There needs to be justice, there's laws on the books that demand justice. But the righteousness of God and the healing power of Jesus are a separate thing. So some churches get criticized. I've seen this. It hasn't happened to our church, I'm aware of. But I've seen churches that do this kind of ministry be criticized because they allowed a person who served their prison sentence come to their church afterwards. And they get criticized for allowing that. And they had rules in place for whatever. And this isn't about anybody that I know personally, but just what I've seen from a distance. And it's like, well, the American justice system played its role, but that person still needs Jesus in their life. They have to find it somewhere. And it's very hard for people to kind of separate the two, right? Like the Lord is going to do his thing. And also there's the law is going to do its thing. And I've seen it get really messy where people just say because they broke a law, they should never be allowed to do church again. And that just doesn't jive with what the scriptures teach.
And then they have, surprise, surprise, the end of the conversation really dives into restoring people who have, again, quote unquote, fallen within the church, which I think is just an unhelpful and dangerous topic to really dive into.
Jesus said, love your enemies and bless them that persecute you. Pray for them that spitefully use you. Okay. So that's very clear, mm-hmm. right? Like if there's a person you hate and you want God to kill them, you know, you want a millstone to be hung around their neck and for them to be thrown straight into hell.
Oh, yeah.
You need to pray for them. That's what Jesus would tell you. That's what he did tell us.
Yes.
It does not mean, look, forgiveness is not a dismissing of sin. Jesus forgave us and he paid for our sin. By forgiving us, he did not wipe away the damage of our sin. He dealt with the damage of our sin.
And one last kind of crazy curio from this episode is Ken Scop, who is now, I guess, professing to be charismatic in some way within his ministry, recounts this vision that he claims he had from God, which is just absolutely bizarre. So you'll have to listen to that for yourself.
Okay, here's a crazy little charismatic story for you. I had a vision last year in the prayer room here at the church, and I had no context for the vision. Like, there wasn't something I was thinking about, but I was just asking the Lord what he wanted to show me about ministry, and he showed me all of these warriors in a field with arrows in their back, and I went through the field and just saw all these men that were wounded, and then he showed me a tent where there were the tent was filled, like a Civil War tent almost, a Civil War medic tent, a Civil War hospital, just rows and rows of wounded people on cots.
Wow.
And then he took me outside the tent and he showed me all of these potential doctors, potential healers, potential leaders arguing with each other. And so you have a field full of dying people, you have a hospital full of dying people, and you have leaders arguing and not ministering to these dying people.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great picture of the church, right? We're arguing over the best method.
But again, I've linked to their full podcast in today's show notes. You can find that there. Listen to the entire thing for yourself if you would like to, and see if you agree, disagree with some of the points that I'm making here. But ultimately, I would just say, and I think people can tell from the highlights of this episode, if you can call them that, that this is not a helpful episode on this topic whatsoever. But anyway, that's a couple of the stories that have happened and come across my way in the last week or so. I wanted to cover those on today's episode. Let me know what you thought of this breakdown episode. I wanted to give kind of a digest of some of the stories that have happened within the past week and in recent time that need to be addressed and need to be heard about. Let me know if you like this format. Let me know if it's something you'd like to hear more about. I know so many of you are listening to the show to keep up to date on some of the happenings within the IFB movement and some of the adjacent circles to that, like churches that were IFB have moved into the more fundamentalist sects of the Southern Baptist Convention. But I wanted to try out this format, wanted to put together a piece of content that would break that down in an easily digestible way, and really hope this episode was helpful to those that are listening. Thank you so much for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. I truly do appreciate all the support, all the incredible people that have gotten connected through this show, and look forward to seeing you guys in tomorrow's episode with the one and only Jon Snow. One of the best interviews I think that I've gotten to be a part of in a little while. Really love this conversation. And I felt knocked off my game as an interviewer in the conversation because the episode hit me emotionally like a Mack truck. And Jon is just an amazing person, shares an amazing perspective on his story. And I hope you'll tune in to that episode as well. Again, the best people to listen to when talking about church hurt, church abuse is survivors themselves. So I hope you'll listen to tomorrow's episode with Jon Snow. Again, that drops on Sunday. And thanks again for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. I'll catch you in the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes. And don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.